Nancy Pippen with Herald Review. Decatur. The adventures of Henry and Mudge took a new turn on Wednesday as Decatur Police Patrolman Larry Brooks read with students at South Shore School. As part of a cooperative initiative between the Decatur School District and Decatur Police Department, officers visit the school twice weekly to read to and with children. They ask us for volunteers, and I said I'd do it, Brooks said. I did it at the Boys and Girls Clubs over the summer, and it was a great time, something I wanted to experience as well. The idea of humanize the officers so kids will see that they're regular folks with families just doing a job, Brooks said, rather than to only encounter a police officer when something bad has happened. I introduced myself and told them I read with my son, so they're okay, he's a dad. Just trying to relate to them, Brooks said. Teacher Lisa Landacre has a reading group every day, a mixture of students in grades 1 through 3, and it's a good time to help individual children with specific reading challenges. One hope is that having a police officer read with them could make them more enthusiastic about reading. The more they read, the better reader they become, she said. This is just giving them an opportunity to interact with a policeman on a positive basis. The more they read, the better reader they become, she said. This is just giving them an opportunity to interact with the policeman, with a police officer on a positive basis. The more they read, the better reader they become, she said. This is just giving them an opportunity to interact with a police officer on a positive basis. The volunteer readers are helping with the district's Literacy for All initiative, proposed by Chief Instructional Officer Ed Moyer in January. When the district's state test scores were disappointing, even though the Illinois State Board of Education had warned schools that the first year's results would be low due to the change to Common Core and a new and different format of testing, Moyer suggested to the school board that a new emphasis on reading in every subject would help. Decatur's reading results were 21% below the state average, and 70% to 75% of students were not reading at grade level. If you struggle to read at an appropriate level of complexity, it has an impact on everything else, Moyer said to the board in January. Literacy for All encourages teachers, no matter the subject or grade level, to incorporate literacy and reading into every lesson. While it's not a formal program with steps to follow, Moyer said all teachers are reading teachers, and making reading an integral part of every portion of the school day will improve reading skills for ease and fluency, which will improve. Moyer said all teachers are reading teachers, and making reading an integral part of every portion of the school day will improve reading skills for ease and fluency, which will also improve student achievement overall. Cleanup of former Intermet Wagner casting site has started. Decatur. Cleanup efforts are progressing at the former Intermet Wagner casting site in Decatur, with plans announced Wednesday to develop the area. Viewig Real Estate has been working with the City of Decatur, Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce, and Illinois Environmental Protection Agency as it hopes to make the site more presentable and find a new user for the property. It is located east of North Jasper Street and south of Marietta Street, with rail lines to the south and east. The facility has been partially demolished with only the buildings along Jasper Street standing, along with a couple of smaller buildings north of Sangamon Street. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency joined the efforts last week in assessing the environmental hazards at the 34-acre property as a cleanup process is beginning that is expected to last another 2 to 3 months. The EPA can spend up to $1.9 million on the project while having 8 contractors on site. "We'll have a blank slate by the time we're done," developer Tim Hewig said. "We look forward to marketing the property in the future. Before the site can be redeveloped, the EPA is working to remove asbestos, capacitors containing polychlorinated biphenyls, PCBs, mercury, chrome dioxide, and other waste that could pose potential risks to human health. The agency is planning to dig up and dispose of contaminated soil, demolish old structures as necessary, dispose of or recycle capacitors, and remove debris from the site, which is zoned for heavy industrial usage. Since the 1880s, the land has been used for electroplating, along with operation of a radiation room, a bulk petroleum plant, several mechanic shops, and several foundries. Wagner Castings began operating there in 1917. The EPA will be monitoring air quality during the cleanup to protect public health, said Craig Thomas, federal on-scene coordinator with the U.S. EPA. He said information on the project is available at www.epaosc.org/intermetwagnercastings. And a final report will be issued when the cleanup is completed. An estimated 3,850 cubic yards of asbestos debris will be removed, along with treating 7,000 square feet of asbestos in one building. The EPA plans to send waste to approved disposal or recycling facilities. Thomas said workers in hazmat suits were on site removing mercury from one of the buildings while a crowd gathered nearby as details of the project were announced. The Illinois EPA became involved with Wagner for redemption. The Illinois EPA became involved with Wagner for remediation efforts at the site in 1997, said Craig Dunn, voluntary site remediation unit manager with the IEPA's Bureau of Land. The facility was sold to Intermet Corporation in 2001 before that company filed for bankruptcy in 2004 and the plant closed late in 2005, remaining vacant since then. Efforts to clean the site after it was sold in 2008 to a group of investors called 825 North Lobear LLC and attract a new user never fully materialized. The project to develop a Class A logistics rail service distribution facility was to be privately financed. "Nothing has happened at this site since 2010, Dunn said. Efforts to clean the site after it was sold in 2008 to a group of investors called 825 North Lobear LLC and attract a new user never fully materialized. The project to develop a Class A logistics rail service distribution facility was to be privately financed. Nothing has happened at this site since 2010, Dunn said. If the current transformation efforts are successful, revamping the distressed site can lead to economic growth, job creation, revitalization of the surrounding neighborhood, and increase the city's tax base, said Marinda Rothrock, Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce president. The economic development outlook is changing with the potential for the site to be productive use. The economic development outlook is changing with the potential for the site to be put to productive use again, Mayor Julia Moore Wolf said. About 1,000 people worked at the plant in 1990, having once produced. The economic development outlook is changing with the potential for the site to be put to productive use again, Mayor Julia Moore Wolf said. About 1,000 people worked at the plant in 1990, having once been a proud part of Decatur's legacy. Going back to when Wagner was here, this was a thriving plant with employees who came to work every day and made a great living, Moore Wolf said. We've got an opportunity to come back to that. This hasn't been much to look at, so this is... This hasn't been much to look at. This is now a phenomenal opportunity for the community. Buig said about $100,000 has already been spent clearing vegetation just to assess what kind of shape the property is in. Weeds had grown through most of the facility and covered most of the parking lot. Trespassers have stripped wires and taken anything of value that could be found, leaving behind broken bottles and broken windows. Utility crews once discovered pit bulls chained to a fence and evidence that they were being made to fight nearby. Harvest is time to share road with farmer. Harvest is time to share road with farmers. Bloomington. As Bart Bittner was driving his combine on a road alongside his family farm east of Bloomington late afternoon recently, several cars approached from both directions. Bittner pulled as far to the right as he could without his combine overturning in the ditch. Half of his combine was in the road and half was in the ditch. Every car slowed down, and all but one passed carefully, but one driver whipped around Bittner. That's not unusual, the fifth-generation farmer said. Most drivers are patient. Some are not. How often does he have a close call during harvest season? It happens weekly, Bittner said, as he drove the 18-foot-wide, 36-foot-long combine. I don't blame people, Bittner continued. I don't want to drive 25 miles per hour either. But I've got a job to do, he said, and I want to do it safely. It's better for people to arrive at their destination a little later than not at all. When it's between a car and a combine, the car never wins, warned Peggy Rumba, program manager for the Bloomington-based Illinois Farm Bureau. Patience will be the operative word during the next several weeks as harvest begins in central Illinois. That means farmers will be driving combines and tractors with grain carts on country roads to get their fields to harvest corn and soybeans. That means farmers will be driving combines and tractors with grain carts on country roads to get their fields to harvest corn and soybeans. That means farmers will be driving combines and tractors with grain carts on country roads to get to their fields to harvest corn and soybeans. That also means sharing the road with cars and other vehicles accustomed to driving 55 miles per hour. Sharing the road well can be the difference between life and death. That's why Illinois Farm Bureau, Illinois Department of Transportation, and Illinois State Police are collaborating again this year on Caution, Slow Down, Share the Road, a program encouraging rural road safety awareness among farmers and non-farmer motorists. According to DOT, during 2014, the most recent year for which figures are available, 241 crashes involving farm equipment happened in Illinois. 57 people were injured. 5 died. You should expect to see more tractors and farm vehicles on the roads as harvest season gets underway, DOT spokesman Brian Williamson said. Be alert and use caution as they will be moving at a slower speed. Please be patient and give farm vehicles lots of room. Decatur. Hassinger, GOP denies involvement in claims against Scott. Dan Hassinger has denied any involvement with Tuesday's petition that requested a special prosecutor investigate alleged misconduct by Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott. I want the citizens of Macon County to know that this was not a personal or political attack by me or my campaign, Hassinger said in a statement released Wednesday afternoon. Hassinger's comments are in response to a statement released late Tuesday evening by Scott, where he said the claims made against him were politically motivated. These accusations are nothing more than a political motivated attack by two supporters of my opponent shortly before the election, and is an attempt to distract from the positive successes and accomplishments of the last 4 years, Scott said. The November race for the state's attorney's position is a rematch of 2012, when Scott defeated Hassinger by nearly 9,300 votes. The end of that race turned bitter when allegations of an unlicensed daycare center at the Scott residence became a major talking point. In a separate news release, the Macon County Republicans also denied involvement in the petition. The Macon County Republican Central Committee does not condone the usage of the judicial system for political purposes, County GOP Chairman Bruce Pillsbury said. The petition was filed Tuesday by an attorney for Greg Mattingly, a Republican member of the Macon County Board and chairman of the county's Justice Committee, which oversees the state's attorney's office, among other law enforcement and criminal justice departments. Mattingly has said the petition was filed by himself as a private citizen and not in any connection with the county or his role as an elected official. He said it came to be after hearing concerns from several past and current employees in the state's attorney's office. The allegations against Scott in the petition range from electioneering to unauthorized use of county equipment and harassment. Scott has denied the allegations and said he will continue with the daily duties of the attorney, of the state's attorney. Crime news. Stab wounds, DNA focus on Yost murder trial. Sullivan. Of the four knives found near the body of Sherry Randall and her accused killer, Michael S. Yost, likely used the one with the shortest blade to repeatedly stab and cut himself. That was the testimony of Dr. Shipping Bowe, and also a finding of DNA testing presented Wednesday in Moultrie County Circuit Court on the third day of Yost's bench trial on four counts of first-degree murder. Beau is the Urbana-based forensic pathologist who performed an autopsy on Randall, 43, the day after she and her ex-boyfriend were found lying together on the floor of her blood-spattered apartment in Sullivan on March 4, 2015. The pathologist also gave testimony about Yost's wounds based on a review of the Sullivan man's medical records and photographs of his injuries. Beau said Yost suffered 9 relatively shallow stab wounds, 2 to his chest and 7 to his abdomen. That did not, in his opinion, reflect a desire to die. He said all could have been made by the utility knife found on the bed next to the 2 people. Corey Forma, a forensic biologist, DNA analyst with the Illinois State Police, testified earlier in the day that blood samples taken from the blade came from one person and the DNA profile matched that of Yost. Beau's testimony about the defendant's wounds conflicted with that Tuesday of Sullivan paramedic Caleb Randall, who said under cross-examination by public defender Brad Rao that Yost suffered a punctured lung. The forensic pathologist said Wednesday that Yost suffered a collapsed lung caused by a wound to the pleural cavity, along with an injury to his liver. Beau also deferred with paramedics Randall and Larry Edwards and the Illinois State Police Trooper William Fretchley on the appearance of Randall's face, which all 3 described as unusually discolored, if not swollen, while the pathologist said he saw no evidence of blunt force trauma to her head at autopsy the next day. He also said he saw no fibers in Randall's left hand, in an apparent contradiction to testimony by Fritchley, who was also present at the autopsy on March 5, 2015, at the Champaign County Coroner's Office in Urbana. Beau testified that Randall suffered 15 stab wounds, deeper than those suffered by Yost, but because of no major arteries or organs were damaged, it took about an hour for her to die from pain and blood loss. For Randall's parents and other family members present, this was one of the most difficult moments of the day. Other results reported by Forma showed most samples taken from Randall's apartment contained DNA from 2 people, primarily Yost or Randall, with the analyst unable to exclude the other as the secondary contributor. Items tested for DNA included blood from a sink handle and bleach bottle in the bathroom, a sink handle in the kitchen, a door handle leading from the kitchen to the laundry room, a footprint from the kitchen floor, and a blade of the utility knife found in the bedroom. Investigators also found 3 longer knives on the bedroom floor, but Forme offered no testimony about them. He did testify, however, that he tested a black tennis shoe found on the bed, as well as the inside and sole of a sock, and reported that the sole of the sock contained DNA matching Randall's profile only. Also on Wednesday, Moultrie County Coroner Lynn Reed testified that Randall's blood alcohol level was 0.247%. Anyone with a level of 0.08% or higher is considered legally drunk in Illinois. There has been no testimony about Yost's blood alcohol level. The state's attorney, Jeremy Ritchie, assisted by appellate prosecutor Ed Parkinson, are expected to wrap up their case against Yost today after the trial resumes at 9 a.m. It will then be Rao's turn to call witnesses for the defense. The defendant's fate will be decided by Circuit Court Judge Dan L. Flannel after Yost waived his right to a jury trial. Partner in planned robbery nets 3 years. Bloomington. A man who admitted to helping a woman plan a bank robbery and make a false bomb threat to divert police attention from the crime has been sentenced to 3 years in prison for his role in the plot. Brian Purcell, 36, of Bloomington, pled guilty Friday to conspiracy to commit. Brian Purcell, 36, of Bloomington, pled guilty Friday to conspiracy to commit financial institution robbery and disorderly conduct. Dismissed in a plea argument was a charge of making a false bomb threat to Illinois State University. Purcell was sentenced to a concurrent 2-year term for disorderly conduct. Purcell and co-defendant Joanne Etter, also 36, were charged with the planning the July robbery of Busey Bank on North Veterans Parkway and similar robberies in 2 other parts of the Twin Cities. A September 30 hearing is scheduled to review Etter's case. According to authorities, Purcell called ISU and said, "I have placed chemical bombs on your campus and they will go off within 2 hours unless I receive $1 million. The call was traced by police to Ewing Park in Bloomington, where Purcell was located. Purcell told police he got cold feet after he saw a police car near the bank. A note police found on Purcell when he was arrested. The suspect demanded $10,000 from a bank teller. He threatened to open fire on bank employees if police were contacted, according to court records. Following Purcell's direction, police located a realistic BB gun dumped by Purcell on Constitution Trail inside an apartment shared by the two. Police also found a sketch pad with handwritten robbery and bomb threat notes and maps of banks," said a prosecutor's statement. Adult education a dire need. CNA classes fills quickly. Decatur. Rocky Wilkerson received an early morning phone call from the custodian at the Adult Education Department on East El Dorado Street. He said people have been waiting since before dawn, said Wilkerson, the executive director. They were sitting outside when I pulled up. It shows how badly these programs are needed, and I can't do any more because I don't have any more money. This is the last one I have. The ones who didn't get in were really upset. The earliest arrived at 4 a.m. The custodian doesn't get there until 6 a.m. The attraction was a grant-based class to become a certified nursing assistant, which means that students don't have to pay tuition if they've passed a pretest with a high enough score. Being a CNA can lead to a job and is also required to go on into licensed practical nursing or registered nursing, all fields with shortages and plenty of job openings. Adult education specializes in helping people bring their skills up to speed and move into self-sustaining employment. The state of Illinois still has no budget, though a stopgap measure was passed to fund critical services such as education and social services. Thanks to that stopgap, adult education was funded through the end of the calendar year. But money is tight, and Wilkerson cannot offer the number of classes she once could. In January, students who had taken the test and qualified for classes learned that the classes then underway would be the last unless funding came through. Only classes Wilkerson could offer were tuition-based and cost $975, out of reach of most of the low-income students the program serves.